Florida State versus Alabama. It's a big week one for the Seminoles, Michael. Can they shock the world and upset the Tide? That's what we're talking about today in our official first game preview of the 2025 season, talking about this big-time matchup that is a big part of a week one that you cannot miss for college football. So, man, week zero is already here. We already had some games in the books here. So, just, man, really excited to now turn our focus to week one and talk about Florida State as they get back in action for the 2025 season. And, Michael, we are jumping into the season head first against a preseason top 10 team in the Crimson Tide. So, man, really excited to jump into this one. But before we do that, my friend, how are you? And thanks for joining me for another episode.
Oh, thanks. I'm so excited for football season to be back. Man, Florida State, Alabama, 330, renovated Doak Campbell Stadium. Super excited. Can't wait to get into it. Talk about just this whole game, what Florida State has been building towards this summer, what we as the fans have been building towards this summer. Already college football kicked off in prime fashion with Iowa State winning an Aer Lingus in Ireland, 24-21. That score
gave me a little
familiar.
PTSD, huh?
Yeah, right? That's what I was
already
thinking.
Had the gate.
I was like, hold on a second now.
Yeah.
But no, ready to go. Let's get into this.
But hey, then Hawaii pulls the upset.
That's
so,
right.
I mean, other than Stanford's coach looking like Mario Cristobal out there with his clock management, I feel a little better about that game now coming out of the gate. But yeah, man, really just excited for Florida State, Alabama. Again, you know, this was a game that we had circled that we were excited about. And I know it lost some sheen after last year, after the season that you had. But there's really no better opportunity to come out of the gate and announce that maybe Florida State is not that team from last year than against an opponent like this. You really That's do right. get to find out who you are. And so we're going to talk about the Tide. We're going to talk about how Florida State can match up with them. We're going to do some updates as we go into this. I actually just got off recording with a Alabama podcaster as well. So I kind of have some further insight in the team. So I will be sharing that with you guys throughout the episode here. Some good, some concerns from that a little bit. See, he gave me a few nuggets that maybe make me happy and a few that maybe make me a little nervous, but I'll share those throughout the show, man. But just again, really excited. Quick programming update here. Guys, this was supposed to be out way early, but we had some audio issues. Totally my fault. But we have got that remedied. We switched streaming service and got a new microphone. So hopefully we don't have any issues anymore. So I apologize about this one being out late.
Good.
But you should be plenty ahead of time for the game here. Michael, another update. Your boy's going to be in Doak for
Let's
this game.
Let's go.
I am excited. I had originally not planned on being at this game, but the stars aligned. You know,
yes,
I still have jury duty that week, so it's still touch and go. I might have like a contempt warrant on my back. I might be like eastbound and down, like the bandit running to this game. But one way or another, I'm going to be in attendance. So, man, I'm excited. Obviously, that means we get to hang out as well. All the listeners, I've already talked to a couple of people. If you guys – I didn't have time to throw together a tailgate, so if you guys are going to be at Doak and you're going to be doing something, man, give us a location, and we'd love to stop by and say hey. But obviously, man – just really excited. I get to see Doak, you know, in his debut, and I get to see this big game. And so, man, I'm pumped.
Well, listen, I got disguises for you. We got fake mustaches. We'll make sure that if the TV camera gets on you, your name is Pedro, and you're all about it, and it'll be just fine. You get down here to Tallahassee, it's going to be a party.
You know, it's funny. Quick side note. It's funny. I actually called out of work one day in 2013 for the Miami game and ended up – I went to game day. I called out, and a friend of mine who's a Florida State fan had game day on in the fire station where I worked at the time. And they literally – they come around and they hand me if we're going to do it, we're going to do it big. They handed me a shirt, and they said, be ready coming back from commercial break. And the camera comes straight on me, and my captain at the time sends me a text like 2 minutes later. It's the Coke Zero Fan Zone. He's like, hey, have a Coke, and I hope you get to feeling better. So I got busted big time on TV.
Oh,
so
that's great.
Hopefully that don't happen this time, but that was a pretty funny story there. So, man, yeah, really, really excited to be in attendance for this game. Really hoping to connect with some of our listeners at this one. We'll still be at the Miami. We'll still be at UVA and Virginia Tech. So, Michael, let's start this one with a couple of quick updates here. Yep. Talking about this game, because we're going to jump right in here. So first off, a little bit of injury news. That is where we're going to start here. So far, it sounds like Kevin Wynn is going to miss this game. Now, that's unfortunate. Mike Norvell, we know Florida State doesn't really give out injury updates, but he said this is one that could stretch on a little bit. You know, he said Squirrel White, who's been out as well, should be available for this game. Jason Jenkins as well. So that's good. You know, the Kevin Wynn news is kind of that mixed bag, right, where it's like you really wanted him to be a part of this game. I don't know how much a freshman defensive tackle was going to be a part of your game plan, but it's like I was telling the Alabama guy, like, if you're already concerned about missing your freshman defensive tackle in game one, it kind of tells you where your D-tackle depth is. But it does stink that he's going to be out for this game. But, man, at least it's big news to get Squirrel White back.
Absolutely. Listen, Squirrel White, hopefully he's able to be full go for this game. He's able to play because he's going to be a key piece of that receiving core going into this game this year. Having Jason Jenkins back, you know, like the thing we, you know, most people assume that he wasn't going to be able to play for pretty much half the year. So be able to have him hopefully get meaningful snaps against Alabama is huge. Yeah, the Kevin Wynn thing, it's a bummer. Not a bummer from like a starter standpoint, but from a depth standpoint. Yep. You were hoping to be able to have him kind of spell those the starting line there, be able to get some really good reps, especially as a true freshman. But, you know, hopefully, you know, he'll get back on the mend and we'll be able to see him real soon.
Yeah, and I mean, when you talk about Squirrel White, this is a guy that's put up 100-plus yards on Alabama in the past. So
that's right.
Having him is going to be huge. I just hope he's at 100%.
Yep.
So as we get ready to talk about this game and Alabama, I just want, if you guys are new to the channel, maybe you're returning, but maybe haven't seen one of our game previews yet, I just want to give you a little, a quick note on how we do this, right? So we typically watch the film as much as time will allow us to do. And you guys know I'm the stats guy. I'm like a college football forensic scientist or whatever. And so I really like to dig into the numbers and stats. We try not to get too much so where it gets boring. But at the same time, the reason I say that is we let a lot of the numbers in the film talk, right? If you're a neutral or opposing fan, we're not doing this to trash on the other team.
Correct.
We're just interpreting what we see for what it is, right? And you also have to understand that we come at this as an FSU channel from an FSU standpoint and how we can kind of poke holes in your team for Florida State to win. So that's kind of how we approach things. But Michael, let's get started talking about this massive week one matchup here. Florida State host Alabama 3:30 on Saturday inside the newly renovated Doak Campbell Stadium on ABC, nationally televised game. I think it's CBS Game Day or something like that is going to be in attendance. So that's going to be cool as well. The one thing, Michael, that we got to talk about with this game is the Lord has blessed us with some fall football weather, it looks like. And it looks like the high is only going to be around 85, 86 degrees on Saturday. Typically, that would be about 806 degrees in any other season. So 86, cloudy. There is about a 30% chance of rain or so. I mean, it's Florida. You know, you could get that hour or two long thunderstorm there in the afternoon. Hopefully, it's not something that pushes the game start time back because that is definitely a possibility at 3:30. You know, I wish it was a night game, but I understand why we didn't get the night slot. But yeah, man, 3:30 p.m. kick and some nice weather for this one.
Yeah, I'm really excited. You know, I know that there has been talked about projected rain and all that. Hopefully, we're able to avoid the rain. Hopefully, it's just a little bit outside the city, or if we get any, it's just a little bit of sprinkle. But, man, 3:30, you know, we wanted a night game, Jesse. We really wanted a night game for this. But, you know, 3:30, Doak will be rocking, renovated, almost sold out there. I imagine every fan will bring it because, you know, this is an opportunity to see what difference this team makes this year. And I think the environment's going to be great. I think we're praying that the weather would hold up for us, but I think this environment's going to be one of the best we've seen in this new stadium.
I know that's one of the reasons I couldn't miss it, right? Because this is one of the things, side note, that we talked about when we had conference realignment. Like, imagine you play in one of the premier two conferences and you get these kind of opponents all the time. Oh, it would be huge. So, man, when you talk about this game, though, Michael, here's the interesting thing is really, I think outside of the you know, the people wearing garnet and gold in Tallahassee, nobody gives you a shot in this game. It is really interesting when you start looking at some of the numbers here. So first off, the spread is 13.5. That number has escalated. I think it was around 10 points when it first opened up, maybe 9 to 10 points. It's up to 13.5 now. Over under is 50.5. What that implied score would break down to is around 32-19. So about a 31-20 game. That's what they're looking at there. The money line is no surprise. Now, this is for straight up no spread.
That's right.
91% of the bets are on Alabama and 78% of the money is on Alabama. So, again, everybody thinks Alabama's going to win this game. And, Michael, here's the other thing. A lot of people think they're going to cover because 72% of the bets against the spread are on Alabama and 75% of the money is on Alabama to cover that 13.5 spread. When you talk about some win probabilities here, Pro Football Focus has you at 18.3% and ESPN, which, you know, we don't like ESPN anyway.
Yep.
Those guys got you all the way down to 9.4%. So less than a 90% chance to lose this game, according to the predictor models there. And granted, they're wrong all the time. The spreads are wrong all the time. But man, again, it's just there's really nobody outside of this, outside of Tallahassee, that thinks you're going to win. Even the Alabama guy who was very respectful to the program and everything like that, he's like, it's not an indictment on you guys, he said, but I think he feels really good about this team. And even he thought his confidence rating, like we did in our preview show, he had them at about a 7.5 to win. And he thinks they're going to cover. So there's just not a whole lot of belief.
Yeah.
But I think, and I'll throw it back to you on this, man. I tweeted about this the other day. This game really does give me 2022 LSU vibes. You know, you heard, you can't beat them. They got more talent. They got Brian Kelly. They don't lose in the Superdome. And you know, all Florida State did was go in there and beat them in their backyard. And so now you get this team at home. You're kind of tough to prepare for because there are a lot of unknowns here. You're kind of being told that you don't have a chance in this game. And so I really think that I understand why it is the way it is, right? They're more talented on paper. They are coming off a better season. I get all that. I just got this weird gut feeling, man, that this is like that 2022 LSU game all over again where you are being completely slept on and overlooked in this game. And so maybe you can just come out and punch them in the mouth. And so we'll see how it goes, man. But I just got that weird feeling, right?
Yeah, I can totally understand that. I mean, you're going up against a team that has had one of the highest blue chip ratio high school recruits for gosh knows how many years under Nick Saban, right? And it's not like that ratio just dropped off the face of the earth with Kalen DeBoer coming in. You know, he's probably not recruiting at the same clip that Nick Saban is, but he's still got dogs. He's still got some really good guys in there, right? And so yeah, they're better on paper as opposed to that. They're coming off a 9-3 win season. You're coming off a 2-10 season. But here's the difference that I think that we have to think about. You've said this beautifully throughout the summer, is that, you know, in this transfer portal era, it's really hard and almost a fallacylical argument to compare this year's Florida State team to last year's Florida State team, because it's almost not the same team.
Yeah, it's really not.
It's really not. You have almost an entirely new team that is donning the garden in gold that's coming in. And so now the problem is we just don't know what we got in this, you know, almost new team. And so it makes sense that Vegas and all the people out there and the talking heads, I'm sure, will come and say, you know, how is Florida State going to survive against Alabama? Absolutely. Like if I was a talking head out there, which I am a talking head, you know, I might think the same thing. Like, man, I don't know how Florida State, if I was a neutral fan, how is Florida State going to survive Alabama? Alabama's so good. They come on 9-3 season. But I also think, too, that we have seen when Mike Norvell has been backed into a corner, when all the chips are down, right, somehow that bro figures it out. I mean, you talk, like you said, LSU 2022, no one gave Florida State a chance to win. Nobody did. And all they did was walk into the Superdome, and basically, if it wasn't for a fumble on their end zone, they blow LSU out.
Yeah.
And then subsequently, next year, they went on and blow LSU out. So
right,
who knows? But I totally understand that feeling.
Yeah, and even then, the 23 game, a lot of people thought that was at least going to be close with them winning the West the year before, the SEC West. And so, yeah, it's going to be – I understand, right? I understand why it looks like it is on paper. But again, man, I think that puts a lot of the pressure on Alabama, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But you referenced 2024, and being this is the first game of the season, we don't have any data to go on this year. So it's going to be a lot of projections. And so I think we'll start really when we talk about Alabama, looking back at that 2024 season kind of in a nutshell real quick. And 9-4 record last year. It wasn't up to Alabama standards, and I had asked the Alabama guy that I recorded with about that. And, you know, again, it's year one in a new coach. And by the way, I will say that interview that I did with the Alabama guy, it will be dropping on the channel later this week. So I don't want to give away too much stuff there. Make sure you guys check that out as well. It gave some really good answers. I think you'll enjoy that, given an inside look into the Tide here. But 9-4 last season, blew out Wisconsin, blew out LSU, blew out Missouri, and beat Georgia. Michael, this is still a dangerous team. I know everybody says it's not Saban's Alabama because they lost to Vanderbilt and they lost 4 games last year. I mean, they're still blowing out some pretty good opponents here. So they're still a good team. Now, with that being said, they also did lose 4 games last year and really should have lost a 5th had South Carolina not wet the bed at the end of the game there. They lost to Vanderbilt. And I know everybody's like, okay, well, you know, they just got a talent edge. And I get that. But Michael, when I look this up, Vanderbilt last year, when they played that game, had 12 blue chip players on their roster. Alabama had 67. it's not always about the game. They're not. That's why games aren't played on paper. And so the talent edge is obviously important because most of the time, Jimmys and Joes outweigh X's and O's.
That's right.
But it just goes to show that you can stand toe-to-toe with a Giant and you can beat them. And Florida State is in a lot better position than Vanderbilt is. You know, they also get blown out here by a 6-win Oklahoma team to end the season. They lost two of their final three games, and they went 2-4 outside of Bryant-Denny last year. So as dangerous as they are, they are also a beatable team, and you get them at home. So I definitely think there is as much reason to kind of look at it from it's still Alabama, but there's also the other side of it where this is not the Alabama dynasty that is maybe like the Death Star, right? From maybe a Star Wars reference where like, it's not impenetrable.
Right.
It's still going to be a really tough challenge.
I mean, yeah, you're right, man. I mean, listen, this is not Nick Saban's Alabama. And even Nick Saban's Alabama wasn't Nick Saban's Alabama towards the end. And we know because we tried to take a few players from there and they turned out to not be Nick Saban's Alabama, right?
Yeah.
And so you look back at last season, you know, they lost to Tennessee. They lost to Vanderbilt. They lost to a bad 6-6 Oklahoma team. The thing about it with this team, though, is they still have one of the best blue chip ratios in high school recruits in the country. They still have five-star talent littered up and down that roster. Kalen DeBoer is still one of the best coaches in the country right now. He just doesn't have a D1 national title. He has three D2 national titles to go with it. So you know you're going to get good coaching. He's got his partner in crime and Ryan Grubb back to run the offense. That defense is going to be better. I mean, I was listening to a show yesterday on you know the four-letter bad network, ESPN, and they were talking about how a lot of the defensive stars are like they're projecting to be really good this year. And so Alabama's going to be good. How good? We'll get to see that on August 30th. But Florida State does have a challenge to come up and be ready for this game.
I agree, man. That's the thing is they had a lot of guys put off the NFL draft.
Yep.
Right. And so they got some pieces. And obviously, again, we're going to talk about that as we go through. But yeah, I mean, it has changed, right? It has changed a little bit with the personnel there. You know, we went to Dodge Charger U and took home a couple of Dodge Neons is what we got out of Tuscaloosa. We didn't get the Chargers or the Challengers. We got the Dodge Neons.
No, we got the Dodge Charger, and then we opened up the hood, and the engine was a motorcycle engine. Like, what are we doing here?
It was blown up, exactly. And so, yeah. But no, man, seriously, I really think you make a good point. Is Kalen DeBoer is a good coach. It's just kind of year one there. And when you talk about Alabama in 2025, look, they are still loaded. They are top five in returning starters with 14. As we just hinted at, you know, they got a lot of guys who put off the NFL draft. And you know, one thing the Alabama guy talked about is, yes, with the late coaching change, they did get picked off in the fall portal session, but they didn't have anybody leave in the spring. And so they were able to retain a lot of guys there. You already mentioned the blue chip ratio, second highest in the country in 2025 at 78% compared to FSU at 53%. Now, FSU obviously is still respectable there,
right?
But again, you're talking about a 25-point difference, 25% difference versus Alabama. Alabama was the only team on your schedule last year that finished top 40 in scoring offense and scoring defense. So they are still balanced and still good on both sides of the ball. As we mentioned, man, it's year two for DeBoer, and they say teams make their biggest jump from year one to year two. I asked the Alabama guy about that, and, you know, he's like, look, man, they just kind of inherited what they had and did what they could with it. He said he doesn't even really think that Jalen Milroe won the job. He just kind of stepped up because they were looking for somebody to do it. So I think coming into this year, you know, you do have a little bit of the better understanding of the players, what they want from you and vice versa. So I do expect Alabama, you know, to continue to get better. And one of the examples that I made was like, okay, well, when Mike Norvell came in here to Florida State, he took over a dumpster fire, right? That's so we could understand a little bit of the tough start. But then you saw things kind of take that jump. And if I'm not mistaken, I think DeBoer has gotten better in year two, every school that he's been at.
Yep.
And so, you know, he didn't take over the situation that Mike Norvell did, but still, it's still a new roster with different players in a different conference in a different part of the country that he's never coached in, you know, down here in the South. And so I think this year, that is one of the things that I worry about, right? Everybody says this isn't Saban's Alabama, but it was also year one. And so you got a guy with a proven history and a loaded roster. Yes, maybe they should have got better results out of it last year, but that is one of the things that worries me about year two is them being able to take that jump.
Yeah, and like, here's the thing, man. I mean, you just mentioned it. Mike Norvell walked into a dumpster fire. There's a massive difference in that, right? Mike Norvell had to build his program basically through the portal. He basically had to swap out an entire roster of players with players from the portal. And in the process, though, while it worked in that short term, what ended up happening, what 2024 really revealed to a lot of us, was the fact that the portal never created a solid foundation. So when somebody took a jackhammer, a la the college football playoff committee, took a jackhammer to that foundation, it cracked immediately. And there was no cement to pour on that thing because we had no foundation of really good high school recruiting, and we had not developed really well, a la 2024 in a 2-10 season, right? Well, Kayla DeBoer doesn't have any of that. So there, the footing is so wild and different among the two programs. And so it makes sense that there's a lot of skepticism coming from the FSU, or going towards the FSU side and Mike Norvell, than there is from Kayla DeBoer and Nick Alabama.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. And that's one thing that he talked about with Ryan Grubb coming in. It's like, look, he's a no-nonsense guy. He'll tell you like it is. He's a straight shooter, kind of like our Tony White. And so he said he thinks that's going to be the biggest change. It's not so much the play calling on the field. It's just going to be the different kind of attitude in the locker room from the coaches. And that does worry me a little bit there. Yeah. But, man, speaking of offensive coordinator, Michael, let's flip our attention here over to the offense, and let's talk about the Crimson Tide offense. But before we do that, I want to bring you a quick word from today's sponsor, Alumni Hall FSU. Look, if you're headed to the game or you're just watching it from home, Alumni Hall is the best place to get your FSU gear. If you are going to be in Tallahassee for that game, their location is 1415 Timberlane Road. Or you can shop online at alumnihall.com. If you're headed to Tallahassee, you can shop online and pick up in store to make it nice and easy for you on game day. They got everything you need for the whole family. And make sure that you save 10% with code SPEAR. Michael, when I get to town, probably Saturday morning, the very first place I'm going is Alumni Hall to load up on some new gear. And you best believe your boy's going to use the promo code to save 10% as well, because it's always best to get more for your money. So we appreciate you guys supporting those who support us and for Alumni Hall rocking with us. So let's talk about this offense, Michael. And really, when I look at the offense versus defense, I think the offense is where your opportunity lies when you talk about this Alabama team and how Florida State can win. I think the first thing we've talked about, obviously, is the difference in Ryan Grubb being the offensive coordinator now. That is a big change for them. He was with Kalen DeBoer when they made their playoff run there at Washington. He was the Seahawks offensive coordinator last year. The guy from Alabama told me that, look, he's been trying to get him to follow him for the last couple of years, and it just didn't work out that way. But they have him back now. So it brings a different mentality to the offense and a little bit more continuity because they know each other so well. So it's not really like you have a learning period there. So that's going to be the big thing. And really, it's not even so much a change in the offensive style, because there's already going to be a change in the offensive style. And that's because there is no more Jalen Milroe. And the thing with Milroe is he wasn't a great passer, but he was still a big part of that offense. The leading passer and the leading rusher combined for 36 touchdowns last year. 20 of those were rushing touchdowns. He literally scored half the rushing touchdowns at the quarterback position. So, you know, when we were talking about the Bama thing, the preview with the other guy, I was like, okay, well, yes, you're going to gain a much better passer, but you're also, as mobile as Ty Simpson is, you're losing a big aspect of the ground game. And so I guess you wonder is, can he make up the gap you're going to lose with his legs, with his arm? And I think that's the biggest question.
Yeah.
But the offense is going to look different, because Ryan Grubb has already said that, look, last year was a Jalen Milroe offense. And it was not, you know, it was wise by them to use the tool that they had to kind of shape the offense around him, but it just creates everything is so much different, right? He said Milroe was really a one read guy and then take off. And so with Ty Simpson, you're probably going to get through more progressions. You're going to have a better passing quarterback. And really he said that Ty Simpson just wasn't ready. He said Nick Saban wanted him to start 2 years ago when Milroe started, but he just didn't feel he was ready. And they think he's much better prepared now. And, you know, when you talk about Ty Simpson, he's not a young guy. I mean, he's still a redshirt junior. He's been with that program for 4 years. This is year four now. So he's got experience within the walls of the program. He just doesn't have a lot of experience on the field. Now, the talent level's there. Five-star, former top three quarterback in the 2022 class. So all the talent on paper is there. But again, man, it's just a guy that doesn't have a lot of experience in it, and it's a different style of play than Jalen Milroe. So I'm interested to see how this offense looks, but, you know, with him at the quarterback there. So a completely different change in quarterback and play caller. But I think this is going, I think they're getting now back to maybe more of what they wanted. I think it, before it was more using what they had. Now it's more using what they wanted. So we will get into Ty Simpson talking about him right now. So obviously the experience is the first thing that stands out, right? Is he's got the talent on paper. He can do all the things, but he hasn't done it in a game situation, man. He's played in 13 career games across his entire career there at Alabama, four last year in 2024, but two of the games were only one snap. So technically he's played in 11 games and only three last year, 188 total snaps, but 123 of those were run snaps. So he's really not been asked to do a lot with his arm either. Now, some notes that I have on his snaps, 68% of those snaps were against non-Power 4 teams, 21% were against FCS teams, has not started a game, has not played meaningful minutes, came in versus LSU at 35-6 and just handed the ball off, came in at 42-10 versus Wisconsin. So no meaningful minutes, no meaningful action, never had game pressure on his back. Because even in those games when he played, Michael, how invested were the other teams when you're already down by 30, 40 points? You know, how invested is the crowd when it's already a blowout? So that's really the biggest thing, man, is I don't doubt the talent level. I don't doubt he's more of what they want in that offense. But you never know what you're going to get with a guy until you turn the lights on and you put him under game pressure. And that's just not something he's faced yet. First start, and again, a stat that I've mentioned, the first Alabama quarterback to start and make his first start on the road in 21 years. So there's a lot of pressure on Ty Simpson to perform in game one.
Yeah, there really is. I mean, there really is. The fact that he's the first one in 20 years to start on the road is insane. It's insane. But, you know, listen, he has been in this program. He's going to be a redshirt junior. Redshirt junior. So
or fourth year junior.
Yeah. So he's been in this program for 4 years. You know, as they would say, there's proof in the pudding as to why he hasn't started over Milroe, that he couldn't win out that, you know, that battle the last year. But listen, this is not like some po' boy, you know, quarterback. This guy's got tools. He's one of the top rated quarterbacks in the country. You know, obviously he's a dual threat signal caller. One of the things he's really known for is he's not like super fast, but he has deceptive speed. I watched some film on him. He's a tough runner too. He will try to lay you out. He will put his head down and go forward with the ball. But he was, you know, in high school, he was known as a prolific runner. He will stretch the defense with his leg. If it's not there, he is willing to take off. They do say that he has a live arm, meaning that he can make all the NFL type throws. But one of the weaknesses that we've seen, in the scouting is that he's inconsistent in his accuracy. At times, his accuracy on routine or high percentage passes can be very inconsistent, which, you know, has been a ding for him as well. And then sometimes his deep ball placement has been a concern with limited action because he hasn't had a lot of chances to really throw the ball really well. And so we're not as sure that when we've seen those inconsistencies, well, is that over the long term or is that just because he only was coming in those spot things throughout? And then of course the experience. I mean, you've already talked about this. He doesn't have like prime game experience. He's come in and backups. Really the only really game he played extensive time was that, I believe, that USF game where he played more snaps than I think any other game he's played in. And so he's going to be an inexperienced quarterback, a fourth year junior on the road, Doak Campbell Stadium, a raucous environment. And so we're going to be real curious to see how he steps up in that moment.
Yeah, and again, like, you know, the guy was like, okay, yeah, everything looks good in camp, and I get that, but he's like, we still have to see it on the field, and I think that's really what Florida State fans are hoping for. I mean, you talk about career stats here over 3 years, 30 of 51, 58.8% completion percentage, 381 yards, no touchdowns, no picks, has not thrown a touchdown in college yet. So that part is pretty interesting. And I think it is, you know, the other thing is when you talk about not really being able to stretch the field or show his arm strength, he's only had two games with multiple pass attempts against Power 4 teams. One was four attempts and one was five. So he's, even against semi-decent competition, he's not really been asked to do a whole lot. And only one of those games was in 2024. So this is by far going to be his biggest workload coming in as the starter. And when you mention the competition that he's faced, 77% of his passing yards came against non-Power 4 teams, 92% of his rushing yards, and all three touchdowns were against non-Power 4 teams. So again, man, this is... whatever you think about Florida State, this is by far going to be the biggest challenge that he's faced so far as a starter. The other thing that was interesting when you talk about him and his accuracy down the field, I looked up some numbers from last season. 64% of his throws were less than 10 yards. And so I definitely think this is also what you're going to see this year, right? A lot of short stuff to really kind of get him in rhythm without letting him take the risk of throwing the ball downfield. Now, I think they will probably do that at some point. But he was 1 of 4 on throws over 20 yards last year with 0 credit to drop. So a lot of that – and I watched some of his film, right? And he does settle in. I will say that. Some of the early stuff was like, oh, man, this guy's just he's really inconsistent accuracy-wise. But he settled in a little bit, did have a pick against Mercer that got overturned on a kind of a BS flag there. But, man – as you talked about not throwing the ball down the field, he did not throw a single pass over 10 yards versus a Power 4 opponent in his career.
Yeah.
And so, again, you're going to be asked to do some things that you have just never done, and you're hoping that Florida State can take advantage and maybe rattle the young signal caller there. Now, when you talk about the running aspect, he will be a part of this running of this run game. But I think what's more interesting with him is just the ability to move the pocket and to make things happen. He's hard to get on the ground. USF sacked him 5 times and 15 dropbacks in 2023, but he's only been sacked 1 time in the past 2 years. And one of the games I watched, now granted it was Mercer, I mean, the guy was pretty much had him dead to rights and he just shook him off and kept going. So it's going to be really important to get him on the ground. But again, man, when we just talk about our overall thoughts here on the quarterback position and Ty Simpson, he's just really inexperienced, especially in big game moments. First start, you know, the first Bama quarterback to start on the road in 21 years. There's a lot of pressure there. He is a mobile guy, but the passing could be one way or the other. We don't really know what it's going to look like yet. And, you know, the thing is, Ryan Grubb even did say that they understand he does have mobility, and they do plan to use it, but he's more valuable upright as a passer and keeping him healthy. So I don't think they want to run him so much like Jalen Milroe to really put him in harm's way, because I have heard where they pretty much assumed that he was going to be the starter pretty much throughout all of camp, but they didn't want to name it yet. But at the same time, he is kind of head and shoulders above the other guys. So it's really more valuable to have him as a passer. So his legs will be a part of the run game, especially with Jam Miller out. We'll talk about that more in a second. But I don't think he's going to be running like Jalen Milroe. And what I also did is I went back and looked at some of the numbers, because Ryan Grubb, he did talk about how Michael Penix there at Washington was a mobile guy, but you probably wouldn't really know it from the way they used him, because they didn't run him much till late in the season. And so I looked up some numbers at Washington in 2023. He ran the ball 35 times in 15 games, Penix did, and 35 times in 13 games in 2024. So they don't run the quarterbacks a ton in this Ryan Grubb offense. Now, they did more at Fresno State, but I think, again, that's probably because he was a mobile guy that maybe was your best player on the team. But when you talk about Jalen Milroe, he had 168 attempts last year in 13 games, 13 attempts per game. So I do expect them to run him a little bit, but it's not going to be anything like Jalen Milroe. And again, he said, look, that was a Jalen Milroe offense. This is totally different. And so I think you're going to try and have a guy that can move the pocket and get to a second and third read on occasion there. So yeah, man, I mean, he's just not done it a lot. He's not done a lot in game time. And so I don't doubt that he has the tools, but it also, you know, from what I talked to glean from the Bama guy is that he's just not been ready, and they think that he's ready this year, but you just don't know until you turn the lights on. And I think that's, as Florida State fans, that's what we're banking on.
Yeah. You know, we're hoping that he still has basically freshman jitters, right? That even though he's been there 4 years, that he plays like a freshman, and that he, you know, starting to see all these complicated defensive schemes, especially that 3-3-5 stack that Tony White runs there, and that it confuses him, and that he doesn't know what to do, or well, he will know what to do because he's been practicing, you know, scout team all summer, but that he's not as polished as you what to do. And what'll be interesting is, you know, with Ryan Grubb, because Ryan Grubb's system centers around a very explosive risk-taking spread system. They want to spread the ball. They want to spread you out, and they want to take shots. So I'm curious to see how they're going to try to do that with a quarterback who has had deep ball inconsistency concerns, right? What do they want to do that? I imagine what's going to happen is they're going to use a lot of RPO stuff, right? So a lot of run pass options, that short vert, that horizontal throw. And then hopefully they're going to try to suck up the boundary and the field safeties up so that they can get one-on-one coverage and try to beat you over the top. I imagine they're going to use a lot of that, but Ryan Grubb is really big on space. And so if Ty has a really good accuracy on the short throws, you're going to see a lot of that early on. Plus, they're supposedly, and I know you have more information on this, but they're supposedly supposed to have one of the best offensive lines in the country coming in this year. So they're going to run the ball down your throat. That's Ryan Grubb loves to set the run by using various run schemes to get the ball in his running back's hand, because they're going to leverage that offensive line.
Yeah, I guarantee it. And again, you know, one of my biggest questions with Ty Simpson is obviously, and we'll switch to talking about receivers now, that wide receiver room is the strength of this offense. Head and shoulders, it's not even questionable. And it is one of the top wide receiver rooms in the country. But are you going to let a guy making his first start on the road throw the ball 30, 35 times in a game to try and take advantage of that? That's a little bit of a risk-reward scenario there. But, you know, talking about that group, obviously they are loaded. So even as a new quarterback, you know, we talk about this all the time on our show, really great receivers can make an average quarterback look good, right? Probably a little bit more than a good quarterback can make average receivers look good. And the problem is they have great wide receivers, and there's really no way to say other than that. Obviously, the name that comes to mind is breakout freshman from last year, Ryan Williams, back again this year.
Is he still 17?
You know, I'm sure he probably had a birthday in there somewhere, but they should have mentioned it. I don't think they talked about it on the broadcast at all last year.
Exactly.
I think they said it more times than he had receiving yards last year. So at least he's 18 now, and we don't have to hear that anymore. Yeah. But man, I mean, a breakout season, there's nothing, you can't take it away from him, right? Led the team with 865 yards and 8 touchdowns, again, with a quarterback who wasn't a great passer.
Yeah.
What can you say about a guy that torched Georgia for 177 yards and a touchdown? I mean, he's good. He's explosive. He's their home run threat. But, you know, Michael, again, I'm not here to say that Ryan Williams is not one of the top receivers in the country, but I also like to look at all the numbers, right? And so some of the things that I look at here is almost 37% of his yards came in two games, and one of those was against Western Kentucky. So between the Georgia game and the Western Kentucky game, that was almost 40% of his yards. And he was really hot early in the season. He started with 50-plus yards in the first 7 of 8 games, but then only had 1 in the last 5 with over 50 yards. So he did kind of tail off a little bit towards the end of the season, kind of a hot or not type of receiver there. But 55.2 reception percentage and 7 drops. Now, obviously, as a true freshman, you do expect him to get better going into his sophomore year, but it was not all perfect from him last year as well. Now, the one, Michael, that I think I might be more concerned about almost than Ryan Williams is Jeremy Bernard.
Yeah.
Senior transfer from Washington, came over with the new staff. The reason I think I'm more worried about him is he's just consistently good, right? Mm-hmm. He's not a game breaker like a Ryan Williams, but he did lead Alabama in receptions last year with 50, still put up 794 yards, but only 2 touchdowns, 68.5 reception percentage with only 2 drops. 10 of 13 games, he put up 50-plus yards. Mm-hmm. Highest graded returning receiver. Probably going to be your slot guy in this 3 wide receiver set with Isaiah Horton coming over from Miami. But this is the guy. Ryan Williams is the home run threat. I think Jeremy Bernard is the one that I'm probably the most concerned about eating you up, because you're probably not going to give him the attention that you're going to give to Ryan Williams or Isaiah Horton. So if you get a mismatch on him, he can be a guy that can hurt you consistently. But then the X factor here is Isaiah Horton, 6'4", 208, redshirt junior, coming over from Miami, 56 receptions, 616 yards, 5 touchdowns at Miami in 24. He was Miami's number 3 wide receiver, so he didn't lead the team or anything like that. But, you know, everyone kind of ate that offense. So his numbers really did look good, but they threw the ball a ton there. 71.8 reception percentage, only 4 drops. Probably going to be one of your wide receivers, out wide out here, man. And one interesting thing that I did gain from that interview with the Alabama guys, I didn't know this, Isaiah Horton is from the same area that Ty Simpson is from. So they actually played 7-on-7 together. And that's one of the reasons he transferred to Alabama, was to be with Ty Simpson. So, yeah, I don't love that. But at the same time, man, again, you know, this is 3 really dynamic wide receivers that you almost have to pick your poison to try and take something away.
Oh, yeah, man. See, the way I look at it is like this. I compared the Bernard kid to when Florida State had Rashard Gary. I mean, they're super dependable. You know where he's going to be. He's going to run the right route. He's going to have the right timing. He's going to be right where you need him to be. Always the bailout, but also making plays that you didn't think he could make. I'll use a boxing analogy. If the Bernard kid is a jab, right? So he's your jab. He's the guy that you can, you know, you always got your jab. You can always have a jab. Ryan Williams is your cross, right? He's your cross.
Yeah. Punch. He's going to knock you out.
He's going to knock you out. And then you got Horton, who could potentially be an uppercut. You don't see him coming, but he's right there. Boom. He's going to daze you out. man, they've got a 1-2-3 just combination of receivers that if Ty Simpson turns out to be the kind of quarterback that can at least, you know, make the right read, get the ball there, set the protections, this is going to be a difficult wide receiver core to cover.
This is probably my number one concern on the offense, right? Is if you can get Ty Simpson into rhythm, how do you stop these receivers? And I like Florida State secondary. I do.
Yeah.
But you probably don't want an undersized Jeremiah Wilson on an Isaiah Horton. So, I mean, they're going to do a lot of zone concepts too. But, man, again, you got three really good receivers and they have a couple of good backups there. Looking at tight end here, I just think really the main thing for me is you got to keep these receivers off your linebackers, right? This is an obvious mismatch, so you can't have that happen. At tight end here, not the greatest group, man. 6'3", 256, Josh Cuvez, I hope I said that right. Redshirt senior, so he's got a lot of experience, but only 16 receptions, 218 yards last year and a touchdown. Pass block grade was down at 23.4. Run block was at 53. I also read on the Bama boards that their top two tight ends had offseason procedures, so they were off to the side during team drills when I read the report on August the 19th. So how healthy are they? Now, I know they like to use their tight ends. I know when I watched the Vanderbilt game, they like to attack the seams with those guys, which is how you attack a 3-3-5. Yep. So it does concern me there a little bit with how they use the tight ends, but it's not the toughest tight end room. So maybe that gives you a little bit of relief there. So maybe you can cover them with a linebacker and get some of the extra help to those dynamic receivers. But when we talk about the run game here, this is where I think Florida State has a little bit of an opportunity, right? So between Jalen Milroe, who is gone, Jam Miller, who is injured, and Justice Haynes, who transferred, Alabama lost 81.5% of its rushing production from last year and 83% of touchdowns. That's a lot to replace, man.
Yeah.
And so now you're going into this with a stable of backs who are talented but inexperienced. Richard Young, 5'11", 212, redshirt sophomore, is the guy that I've heard is probably going to be your lead back. 27 attempts, 146 yards. So not a whole lot of work there. Your backup, Daniel Hill, 21 attempts, sophomore. Kevin Riley, redshirt freshman, only 10 attempts for 30 yards last year. So they're not a ton of experience. But where they do bring in the experience is Dre Washington, Louisiana transfer. He's a smaller back, 5'9", 216, but he is a redshirt senior, has 73 attempts for 478 yards at Louisiana last year, 6.55 yards per carry, and put up similar numbers in 2023. And what the Alabama guy was telling me was, you know, he wasn't necessarily part of the plan to be one of the top-tier running backs, but he thinks now he's going to have to at least be for this game because, you know, when we talk about this running back room, yes, all the top three guys that I mentioned are all blue-chip guys, but there's very little proven production without Jam Miller in the fold. And, you know, when I asked about this to the Alabama guy, one of the things that we talked about was, you know, Kalen DeBoer, or it might have been Ryan Grubb, said that, look, he understands Jam Miller is – the guy, like he is head and shoulders above those other guys. Not that they're talented, but it's just in all aspects, right? It's in blocking, it's in pass protection. And that's one thing that the Alabama guy talked about was how, you know, Jam Miller would lay his body on the line for blocking. You know, you're talking about putting a guy with no experience at quarterback back there, and now you're having to have an inexperienced running back too, who's checking protections and things like that, pass blocking. That's a big thing, man. So I think this is an opportunity for Florida State to have some talented but inexperienced running backs next to an inexperienced quarterback. Maybe that can allow you to maybe get some extra pressure back there on Ty Simpson. I think they're going to be able to run the ball effectively, you know, because they're still talented behind that offensive line, but to me, without a doubt, man, them being without Jam Miller and having a quarterback who's not as mobile and also inexperienced really does kind of hurt the run game, at least against Florida State.
Yeah, they're not going to be able to put up the run numbers that they were putting up last year unless those backs turn out to be, you know, all-world backs again. Obviously, with Jam Miller out, you know, Florida State has – this is a little bit of good news for Florida State. They're going to have to figure out how to, you know, make a dent into that offensive line. But if they can, you know, I imagine with that 3-3-5, you can do so much in the blitzing. They do a lot of slanting, right? They run a lot of game. You'll run, you know – I don't want to get super technical, but you'll probably run like a front face. You know, you'll have your nose tackle go front A-gap of the center, and you can bring a Mike or a Sam on that back A-gap there and run a slant where you slant this way or slant that way, which will create just different angles of pressure to try to confuse Ty Simpson in his checks, try to get the centers, the offensive line to have to go one-on-one, right? Because they want a double team when they're running the ball there. So they have to go one-on-one, which then confuse the running backs as well too. So you're hoping that with the maybe less inexperienced players, in that system, having to play more because Jam Miller out, that you'll be able to, that Tony White will have some schemes that will be able to confuse or trick them so that they might, you know, not be as sound up there and you able to get penetration, tackles for loss, make it difficult, you know, to get yards on carries on that game.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, man, because it's you have to put pressure on them somehow. And yeah. I think that just the inexperience back there is what you're looking at. Unfortunately, they do have a good offensive line, right? Yes. And that's the tough part. And so when you look at, they return three starters here, your left tackle, your center, and your right guard. Obviously, everybody knows the name. Caden Proctor left for, say, about an hour and a half at Iowa and then came back. Center was, you know, the left tackle and the center were both all SEC guys in 2024. The center was a transfer over from Washington, a freshman All-American. They said he's probably their best offensive lineman. And the Alabama guy said he does have high hopes for them, right, for this group. He thinks they can be really good. But the thing that I have, man, is right now, Jaden Roberts, your starting right guard, is questionable health-wise. He's been limited with a concussion. DeBoer said he has not taken any team reps in camp yet. So even if he is ready to go, and the Alabama guy said last year he dealt with injury a lot to where he – would almost not practice through the week, but still get to play about half the game. So he might be available, but with that, man, if he's not, they're down a starter. There's been some shuffling throughout camp. Yeah. I've heard some mixed reviews about his replacement there. The Geo, I forget his last name, Vandermark.
Yeah.
Yep. I've heard some mixed reviews on him. He's a former Michigan State transfer, came over with the offensive line coach who came from Michigan State as well. Then you also have a guy, Cam Dewberry, who's going to be replacing their other guard. And he's like, look, man, he's not the guy that they had last year. I forget the guy's name, but they're like, man, he's one of the best offensive linemen that Alabama's had in a really long time. So,
yeah.
I do expect this group to be pretty good, right? I mean, the Dewberry kid, he was a transfer from Texas A&M, but he was not a starter over there, but he has played over 1,100 snaps, so a lot of experience. The projected starting right tackle is supposed to be really good, but he had a PFF grade last year of 57.6, has only played about 300 snaps, and had a 15.1 pass block grade against South Florida. I didn't know they'd go that low. So, man, I mean, all the potential, right, in the world is there with this offensive line. But I also look at your 48th of 68 teams in the Power Four pass block efficiency, and PFF credited the offensive line with 82.3% of those pressures. You were 59th in sacks allowed. You were 49th in yards per carry at 4.3 with a running quarterback, and you were held under 100 yards rushing four times last season. So you factor in what you did last year. You add that you got a couple of potentially three new starters and some that maybe aren't as good as the guys that went out there. I think it's a really good offensive line, man, but I just don't know if it's like super, super great, right? I'm sure it's a strength, but I just don't know if it's like this crazy offensive line that everybody's making it out to be, right? I think there are some opportunities for Florida State to get some penetration here.
Yeah. Well, you always say this, right? Teams are allowed to get better or worse from season to season, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they may not have the same level of all five offensive linemen that they had last season. But I mean, starting with left tackle, you know, Caden Proctor, I mean, the guy is he has been projected as the top pick in the next year's NFL draft already.
Yeah.
Now there's been some consistency issues show up so far in camp that we've heard about, but I mean, this guy's going to show up on game day and be one of the best. Obviously the center, Parker, Brailsford, I think is how you
Brailsford,
say his name.
Yeah.
Brailsford. Like, he's supposed to be one of the nation's top center. You know, the Dewberry kid from Texas A&M, like you said, didn't get to start there, but has over 1,100 snaps. So he's got experience there. I mean, they're expected to be one of the best offensive lines in the country. While they may not be the very best that they were last year, they still are going to be, my imagination is still pretty good. And really the question comes down to, is their level of good better than FSU D-line and linebacker level of good? That's what's going to be the matchup. Can Florida State confuse and cause havoc when the talent disparity might be better on Alabama's side? Can Florida State scheme itself enough to be able to neutralize that talent disparity?
Yeah, because you talk about a down year for the offensive line in Alabama, it's probably still a, you know, a top 25, top 30 unit. You know, for us, down year was the bottom of the barrel last year. But, you know, again, man, I they're going to be good. I just think when we talk about this offense as a whole to round out the offense here, I know it's supposed to be a really good offense, but they do have a lot of questions in game one. With some new pieces on the offensive line, you're missing your starting running back. You got a new quarterback making his first start. I think you look at this game a lot different if you're in like game five or six, but I think game one, those are some things that you can take advantage of. Now, I know there's a lot of new stuff for Florida State as well, but the question I really have with this offense is where do they go, right? Do you lean on the strength of the receivers but risk putting the game on the arm of an inexperienced quarterback, or do you try and protect that quarterback and run the ball with unproven backs and a little bit of a shuffled offensive line? So, you know, that's kind of my biggest question here, where Alabama goes. But I think either way, with that new quarterback, with that inexperienced running back, with some new members of the offensive line, if I'm Tony Whiteman, I'm turning the pressure up and seeing if I can get to Ty Simpson early and often. This is a James Williams game. Man, just, you know, let him off his leash as a pass rusher and see if he can create some havoc in the backfield and maybe rattle him early on. So that's really my biggest question for the offense is where do you turn, right? Do you put it on the that young quarterback or do you not? But let's talk about the defensive side of things, Michael. And this, unfortunately, this is where you kind of throw some water on my parade, right? Because this defense looks pretty darn good. Now, talking about it here to start with, it is a 4-2-5 swarm style defense. You will see kind of similar to Tony White's 3-3-5. The defensive end is a hybrid edge linebacker guy. Doesn't really put his hand in the dirt very often. They look to create a lot of havoc more than they like to contain things. You will see a lot of spot drop zone coverage to try and keep things in front of you, so that way they can limit extra yards, which is one of their biggest focuses. They don't want yards after catch. They don't want yards after contact with the running backs. So it's an aggressive style defense, and Florida State better be ready for it. And you just look at some of the numbers last year, 10th in scoring defense, but they were 64th in run defense, which is good. And I got some thoughts on that here in a second from what I talked about with the Alabama guy. But, you know, they did give up over 200 yards rushing three times last year, which is good to hear for a Gus Malzahn-led offense here. 19th in pass defense, top 10 in pass efficiency, top 10 in interceptions with 17. They're a good defense, man. They're good across the board. But they were 64th in sacks at only 25. They did lose 11 of those 25 sacks. They didn't get Vandy on the ground a single time. 61st in TFLs, 23rd in plays over 10 yards, and 12th in plays over 20 yards. So they're good at limiting explosives. They're good against the pass, maybe a little weakness against the run. The problem I have with this defense is when you look at from the three main position groups, the D-line, the linebackers, and the DBs, there's really no obvious weakness that you can point to, right? This defensive line is solid, and they are experienced. They are top five nationally per Phil Steele and Athlon. But the one thing that I have heard is there are some depth concerns behind the ones. So maybe they're twos or threes, you know, and you know, when we talk, again, I don't want to give away all the stuff because this is in that Alabama interview too. You know, he's like, it's a long game and it's hot weather. And so, yes, I think if you get those guys moving with a lot of misdirection and stuff like that, and you can wear that defensive line down a little bit, he said, yeah, when the twos come in, there is a little bit of question marks with these guys. And so that might be the only weakness, but linebacker, they're solid. DB, he said, was probably the strongest group of the bunch, right? You have, again, top 10 across the board, really, in pass defense, and you bring back four or five starters, and four or five of those guys are upperclassmen. One of their safeties, Bray Hubbard, was the number six graded safety in the country per PFF last year. So, again, man, it's a really solid defense from top to bottom. There's really no holes you can poke in this defense. But I'll throw it back to you on this. And again, go watch that other episode. Don't let me give away all the sauce in this. But I asked him, I said, hey, man, if this defense is so good, how do you attack it, right? If you were Florida State's offensive coordinator, he said, man, I would attack the edges. I would try and run the ball and you know, get these defensive linemen a little bit gassed. Yep. And I was like, hey, man, I don't like what you told me about the pass defense, but it sounds like if you're wanting to attack with the run, that's news to our ears with Gus Malzahn as coordinator. So I think it's more like this, Michael, to round all that out, as I'll throw it back to you, is I think from what it sounds like, you can't find a weakness in this defense, but the way you match up against what would be their perceived weaknesses if they have one.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, we all know that Gus Malzahn is going to run the ball, right? He's going to run the ball. And the thing is, if I'm hearing you correctly, and they're concerned about their twos and potentially some of their threes coming in to fill in the ones. Well, you know, Gus is going to just keep running that ball. Now, yep. Alabama might come out and they might just tackle for loss, tackle for loss, tackle for loss.
Yeah.
But at some point in time, because Gus Malzahn is not going to change, he's not just going to all of a sudden just start throwing and chucking the ball everywhere. He's going to run his offense. That was one of the things that when I talked to the UCA fans that are here in Orlando, they would always say, like, no matter what, he is going to run his offense. And the premise of that offense is to wear you down by the fourth quarter. That by the fourth quarter, when you see that big, you know, chroma coming at you, you're not trying to tackle that dude. You're trying to, like, just, you know, what Shaheen would do last year, just a little shoulder tap there, you know? Like, when you see Rodell Williams coming at you, you're not trying to tackle them, and they're going to keep coming at you. So that actually gives me a little bit of hope in some ways, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
because Gus Malzahn's going to jab, 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 jab. But yes, you know, the Alabama guy's right. If you want to attack this 4-2-5 swarm defense, and just by the way, for you Noel fans out there listening, this is what Florida State ran last year under Adam Fuller. Like, we were all 4-2-5. Now I would imagine that Alabama probably runs it a lot better because we've condensed it down under Adam Fuller to a kindergarten level defense, and we still couldn't run it. So, but you really want to figure out who's weak on the safety side of that defense. So which safety is the weakest? Because you want to make sure you're flooding that part of the field there, whether it's to the boundary, which is to the short side, or to the field side, which is the longer side there. You want to figure out who's the weakest of there, and you want to make sure you're flooding a lot of your flood concepts there, short vertical passing, and what is a signature weakness of a 4-2-5 defense is a Jesse mobile quarterback.
Yep.
All day, every day. And we have the mobilest of mobile quarterbacks playing for Florida State. So if our offensive line can give Tommy just enough time to make that run read, and if that read is not there, he's gone, man. Cause you got linebackers in coverage. You got linebackers, you know, running with receivers and running with backs. And then when they do the drop zone coverage, right, they're back. You're already giving up 5, 6, 7 yards. So, and then Tommy can make a person miss in a phone booth, man. It'd be nice to have that again. We used to have with Jordan Travis. So those are some of the ways you're going to try to attack that 4-2-5, especially in the seams there. If you can make sure you figure out which of the safeties there, probably not the strongest, you can probably hit that seam a couple good times, and Gus Malzahn will go over the top after he's pounded you. But he is going to run that ball because he wants to wear you down.
Yeah, I think the key is going to be the offensive line in this game for us, right? You have to be able to establish the run, you know, and like the other guy said, a lot of like your motion, your jet sweeps, your screen passes and stuff is how you want to attack this defense. And I'm like, that's music to my ears because that's what Gus Malzahn does. The biggest concern for me is, are you going to be able to effectively throw the ball against that secondary to keep them from loading the box, which is one of the things, you know, that they said they struggled with Jalen Milroe last year is just there wasn't enough of a pass threat that teams could key on things. So really, man, when we talk about this defense and going up against it, my number one question is, can you get to 30 points? Because I don't think Alabama, unless things just get off the rails, right? I don't think Alabama is going to put up 40 points in this game because of all the offensive questions that they have. Now they might, but I just don't think so in game one. But I think to beat Alabama, you're going to probably want to land somewhere around the 30 point range. Now, the problem with that is even in year one under the Kane Womack there as defensive coordinator, they only allowed over 30 points twice last year. Once was to Vandy and once was to Georgia. They only allowed over 20 points 5 times in 13 games. Now, they didn't face a slew of really, really tough offenses, only one scoring offense in the top 30, but they did face 5 in the top 50. And the reason I mention that is because that's where I think Florida State's under Gus Malzahn, where their offense is going to be probably not top 25, but probably top 50. So somewhere in that 30 to 40 range. Well, against those teams, they gave up an average of 22.4 points. They only gave up 30 once. That was Georgia. And they held 2 of them under 20 points. So can you get to 30? That is the thing that makes me the most nervous about going against this defense is I think Florida State's defense can hold them a little bit in check on offense here, but can you score enough to win? Because they don't give up 30 often. So can you get to that number? And, you know, it only took us 11 games to get over 21 last year. So hopefully we have a lot better faring against Alabama. But, man, I think you got to get to 30-ish, and they don't do it often. So that's my main question going up against this solid defense.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, 30 points – for Florida State feels like a, it really does kind of feel like a tall task against, against Alabama, just because what we believe that this defense is projected to be versus what we believe potentially our offense to be, right? We're not sure if our offensive line, if Florida State's offensive line is going to be able to hold up against this front line of Alabama that's projected to be one of the best in the country, right? We're not sure that our receivers are going to be able to get open against what is supposed to be a really good secondary. And then if you got Tommy scrambling around all day because he can't get, you know, 3 seconds of a clean pocket, you know, we're not going to see a lot of big explosive plays outside of maybe his running. And so, yeah, that would be one of my bigger concerns is can Florida State score 30 points? But the key to this game and what something that that actually makes me feel a little bit better is that if Florida State's defense can scheme up enough ways to get Ty Simpson off his kilter, so that he's not launching from a clean pocket, that he's having to scramble. We get him down early in the scramble. We're confusing the offensive line there. We're jamming Ryan Williams. And really, honestly, my focus would be more on the Bernard kid. You know, I mean, I'm not saying you should take your focus off Ryan Williams, but I'm saying, hey, take out the steady jab and force him to try to go get the home run play, because that play is going to have less percentage than the steady jab, right? So take out the steady jab, force him to always try to go home run, and that actually gives you a chance to keep this game in the 20s, where it's like a 24-21, 28-21, you know, somewhere around that. I think if you can keep it there, you have a puncher's chance. If you let Alabama score 30, I just don't think you have much of a chance.
I've won... 1,000% agree. If Alabama scores 30 or 31, I think your goose is cooked a little bit. Yep. If you can hold them to 27, 24 or less, I think you feel really good. I think you feel really good about where you're at. Now, if it does become a close game, Michael, one thing to watch is that they have had a top 20 special teams unit over the past 6 years per Phil Steele, but they are replacing their punter, their kicker, and their long snapper, which could be something to watch. The Alabama guy told me the kicker has really struggled in camp, and the punter come from Colorado School of Mines. So he had one of the best in D2 or D3 or whatever it is. But he's like, you know, anytime you're fishing from that pond, it's not going to be great. So that could be something to watch. Obviously, you guys know Florida State is replacing them as well. So, yeah, Michael, let's get into some final thoughts and some predictions here as we've talked about the offense and the defense here. And so, man, I think a lot of it comes down to the quarterback, right? Let's start with that for me. What's one of my main thoughts? For Florida State to pull the upset here, I'm banking on them taking advantage of that new quarterback making his first start on the road, especially being down your senior running back, which only puts more pressure on Ty Simpson. You know, now if he comes out like Jameis versus Pitt in 2013, we're cooked, right? There is no doubt about it because they have a great receiving core there. If it is a quarterback battle, so to speak, Thomas Castellanos has more experience, but he also has more mistakes in his history. And I also think him being a veteran, he's probably going to be willing to take more chances than Ty Simpson. You know, we've seen some things in camp where it's like, oh, why did you even throw that to for it to even be a bad throw? So I definitely think that is important there. And, you know, when you talk about the quarterbacks here, I think it starts by trying to take away the rush, right? And Tony White's defense has been great against the run. So if you can take away their run game and put it on the arm of Simpson, I think that's probably what you want to do. And the interesting part about that, man, is every single game that Alabama lost last year, they were held under 100 yards rushing. South Carolina held them to 104 and almost beat them. They lost by 2 points. And so if you have a defense that is built to stop the run, and you can maybe take that away a little bit and make that quarterback throw the ball, you know, if he comes out and he has like a great day, a great performance, then you know what, man, it is what it is. You gave it your best shot. You didn't see that coming from an inexperienced guy on the road. But I think that's probably where you got to start, is putting the game on Ty Simpson and hoping that he makes some freshman mistakes. Because, you know, you talk about quarterback battle, Thomas Castellanos, in game one, where you have some miscommunications maybe on the defense or something like that, it could just be the difference of him breaking off one or two long runs that could be the difference in this game. So that's why I like Tommy as well. But when you talk about Tommy, I think in this game, you need him to have – when I went back and looked at how do you beat Alabama, I watched that Vanderbilt game, right? Because Florida State's miles ahead of where Vanderbilt is, but you're right. Also talking about kind of a little bit of an undermatched matchup there that they still won. And in that game, I think Tommy, who's a mobile guy just like Pavia, I think you need to have that style of game. Bama blitzed Pavia 43.5% of dropbacks, but didn't sack him a single time. And he also committed zero turnovers. That is the key to me. 252 pass, 55 rush, and 2 touchdowns. I don't see where Tommy Castellanos, maybe it's more run and maybe less pass, but I don't see where he can't have one, a game like that. But Pavia connected on 80% of his passes were under 20 yards, only one completion over 20. So it was very much a take what you can get, don't try and do too much, and move the chains. And I really think that's what Florida State has to do with Tommy Castellanos. You know, he had a couple games last year where he had 3+ turnovers. That's going to lose you the game against a team like Alabama. So you cannot have that happen. You got to play a clean game, man. Vandy had 0 turnovers, 3 penalties. Bama had 2 turnovers, 6 penalties. They played a cleaner game and they won.
That's right.
Yeah. And you know, time of possession was insane in that game. Vandy held the ball for 42 minutes. Bama only had it for 18. So, you know, really, man, on that thought, I just think you got to play a clean game. And I think if it comes down to the quarterback, you just need – this is your advantage, right? Tommy is not as maybe talented on paper as Ty Simpson, but he's got more experience. And that's what you're really counting on in this game. But I think you also need to start fast. You know, Vandy jumped out to a 2-score lead in under 7 minutes in the first quarter, never trailed the entire game. I'm not saying you need to do that, but, you know, like you talked about with Gus Malzahn, you jab, and then you throw a punch over the top and try and get that knockout blow. If we get down 20 points, jeez, I'm really concerned about catching up. So I think if you can stay in the fight and play a clean game, you give yourself a really, really good chance in this one.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah, if we got down by 20 points, a Gus Malzahn offense is not designed to be able to overcome deficits like that. So if we got down 20 points pretty quickly, I'm not going to say you should just give up, but I'd be pretty close to it. Historically, Gus Malzahn offenses are not designed to make comebacks like that because they're so predicated on the run game, on what they do with the run. You know, I think the key, I would agree with you, man. Tommy not turning the ball over is numero uno number one. He's got to be smart. If the read is not there, he's got to go. And he's got to tuck that ball, and he's just got to go and make something happen, right? If the read is there, trust his instinct. Trust your read. The play is designed for you to get the ball specifically there. Get the ball specifically there. Don't try to always go for the home run play. That's what got him in trouble at Boston College in 2023, was he was always trying to go for that home run play. What helped them, and you have to give credit to Bill O'Brien for this, was that, no, you learn how to take the check down. You learn
exactly
how to take the open receiver, the 5-yard dig, the 5-yard hook, the out route there. You don't always have to go for the bomb or the post route there. And so if he can bring that same mentality into this game, then he will protect the ball, and then he will be a danger. He'll be a threat to Alabama because he's a running threat, and he can make the throws when necessary. So I think that's number one. I think number two important is Gus Malzahn is going to want to go fast. Okay, he is going to want to go fast, and I don't have a problem with it. But man, you got to have game awareness. Gus Malzahn and Mike Norvell, you got to have game awareness. If you got Alabama in the fourth quarter and you're only down 3 or you're up 3, man, you got to look at that clock and say, how can I get the most out of this drive right here? How can I get 4 to 5 to 7 minutes out of this drive? Because the more opportunities you give Alabama to wear down our defense, now it happens the other way, the chances you are to lose that game. So you have to think about that. So I think that's the key, is game management. It's going to be so key in this game. And then I think the third key is going to be, what scheme can Tony White come up with to make Ty Simpson uncomfortable? Can you make him uncomfortable as an inexperienced quarterback for Alabama, first time in 20 years starting on the road in a hostile Doak & Campbell Stadium? Can you make him uncomfortable? Can you scheme it up to where all the stuff he's seen in game day practice, or I'm sorry, in practice, where he's looking at the scout team, all those looks he's got, he's seeing doubles. He's seeing triples of everybody, right? Because we're just hitting them and hitting them and hitting them. And then maybe I'll throw a fourth theme in here. We've got to hit him. And not hit him when he's 15 yards down the field. We've got to hit him at the line of scrimmage. We've got to hit him. We got to go to the whistle and maybe a little bit afterwards.
The echo of the whistle,
because we've got to rattle him. But those would be my 3.5 keys to the game.
Yeah, I think you really want to try and get Ty Simpson, C, and Ghost early. I think that's your best opportunity. And again, this is where James Williams, man, you just got to let him off his leash and try and get back there and affect the quarterback. And again, man, I think taking care of the ball is obviously key number one. Yeah. Alabama lost the turnover battle in 3 of their 4 losses last year. Tennessee was the only game that they did not. So, I think you take care of the ball. I think you stay ahead of the chains to where you don't put this offense in situations it can't convert. And you put pressure on the new quarterback. I think that's how you get this done. It's going to be an uphill battle, without a doubt, man. But I think Florida State, you know, I can see the path to winning, right? It's just you're going to have to play a clean game. You can't give Bama extra chances. This team is too good to do that. And so the last thing here, Michael, before we really kind of get into how we see this game's going to go, is I will say this, man. The pressure to win this game is on Alabama, right? Yeah. Now, there is pressure on Mike Norvell. Make no mistake about that, right? Mike Norvell is under intense pressure. But from where Florida State's coming, you know, from a 2-10 season, just from the national media perspective, and where Alabama's at with a lot of playoff projections going into the season, the pressure to win is on Alabama, right? You let Kalen DeBoer have a couple more 9-4 seasons and miss the playoffs, and they'll be ready to run him up out of there. And so I think that adds a little bit there, that the pressure is on Bama. But, you know, I think when you talk about this game, man, I really, really want FSU to win because what it would do for the program. Like, imagine if Florida State comes out and beats Alabama in game 1 when nobody's giving you a chance. It would be a shot across the bow of the college football world to show that you are not Florida State of old, and you can bury the 2-10 jokes immediately. And now, again, we don't know what Alabama's going to be over the course of the season, but probably pretty good. I think at the end of the day, man, you just can't get blown out. That we've talked about this before. That is the big thing, right? I mean, you look at the way Clemson got beat by Georgia last year. You can still respond. You can still – they won the conference and made the playoffs. But it puts a lot of pressure on you if you get blown out because it's the, oh, woe is me again. That's, you know, you got 2 games after that and a bye week that are not going to move the needle. So then you go into that Virginia game just really kind of nervous because you don't know what this team is, because those 2 games aren't going to prove anything to you. So I think as much as you want to win, I think, man, you at least got to play them close. I think if you walk out of that stadium with a 27-24 loss, you're going to be disappointed that you lost, but you're going to feel okay that you hung with a team that's projected to win the national championship by a lot of people. And in that, I think you can then look at your schedule, because Alabama's probably better than everybody not named Clemson, and you can probably go, all right, I can see 8 or 9 wins on this schedule. So I want you to win. You just can't get blown out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The pressure's on Alabama to win this game because you don't want to lose to Florida State and be the laughingstock of the SEC, which you would be, right? Because they'd be like, oh, you couldn't go beat 2-10 Florida State. So they've lost 11 out of the last 13 games. And so do you really want to have to face that pressure? You're already following the shadows of Nick Saban, right? You don't want to come in the season with your fan base who are already, because of a 9-3 season. Would that be nice to be mad at our coach after a 9-3 season?
I know.
Right. But who are already on the fence about you after a 9-3 season, then to lose to Florida State. So yeah, there's pressure on them, but you know, Jesse, you can miss me with that pressure on Alabama, because there is immense pressure on Mike Norvell. There's immense pressure to win this game. And yes, if you lose, you know, we're not moral Gables. We don't do moral victories at Florida State. But losing close would give us I'm not going to say hope, but it'd be like, okay, you know, I hate that we lost, but there's some signs of life there, man. Mm-hmm. You get blown out this game, you've lost the fan base in a lot of ways, because think about this. The next 2 games, East Texas A&M and Kent State. Who's showing up for that?
Yeah, who's driving all the way? It does nothing for the apathy among the fan base.
Does nothing. And then you have to go to Charlottesville on a Friday night for a high school football game against Virginia, right? Yeah. Where they're all excited and they just got a influx of money, and Tony Elliott's trying to save his job, and you got to do that, right? And then you come back to a Miami that wants to beat your brains in, like. You're setting yourself up for massive failure if you get blown out by Alabama. So to me, the pressure is mostly on Mike Norvell. It's not on these players. It's not even on the assistant coaches who just came in. This is on Mike Norvell to show that 2-10 was not a real deal. That's last year's team. That just was a fluke. This is a different. This is Florida State. We're getting back to the standard here.
Oh, I totally agree, man. The pressure is on both, and it's a huge game for both programs, yeah. without yeah. a doubt, especially for setting the tone for 2025. So, Michael, let's get down to the brass tacks, man. Let's talk about how we see this game going. Again, man, this is tough, right? Because I almost didn't even want to make a prediction for this game because without seeing Florida State, without even having open camp, and I don't know, that didn't work out well last year going off of those opinions, but this team is almost impossible to predict when you've never seen them play the field or on the field with, what, 70, 80% new starters and 70% new coaches. It's impossible. You are literally closing your eyes and throwing a dart at a dartboard. You have no idea what this team's going to look like. But, you know, when we talk about all the things that we talked about, I do see a path where Florida State can pull this upset, right? And I go into this game knowing that on paper they should not win this game. But again, games aren't played on paper. We've seen Florida State rise to the challenge before and overmatch games and go out and win. We saw Bama lay some eggs last year when they weren't supposed to. So I think when we walk out of that stadium on Saturday afternoon, I would be really excited, but the least bit surprised that Florida State went out and won this game. I'm not opposed to seeing an upset here. I also understand the challenge that we're up against. And so we did pick this game on the other show. I'm not going to lie, the one we already recorded. So, you know, I changed how I'm going to do this, Michael, right? Because last time, I ain't going to lie, I picked Alabama to win the game. And then, you know, you came through and I got all excited and I flipped my pick over. But I think what I'm going to do with this is I'm going to give you – we talked about this on the last one that will unfortunately never see the light of air because I screwed it up with my microphone issues. But I talked about the head versus the heart, yeah. right? And so I think my head, who sees the blue chip ratio, who understands what Alabama has, who knows where they're coming from and where we're coming from and all that type of stuff. My head tells me Alabama probably 31-20, right? Mm. They don't cover, but they win by a couple of scores. And you're still competitive in the game. That's what my head says.
Yeah.
But my heart, Michael, because daggone it, I bleed garnet and gold. So that heart in there pumping that garnet blood around, you get them in Doak. You got a lot of inexperience there. We're going to be hard to prepare for because you got a lot of film, but you've never seen a lot of this stuff together. Some inexperience on the offensive side could lead to some mistakes. My heart says you grab a nail biter. The defense wins you the day. Offense comes through with just enough, and you win 24-21. Maybe that's a defensive touchdown. Maybe that's a special teams touchdown.
I take it.
But my heart says 24-21. Maybe it's even John Papuchis draws up some crazy block thing like man. He always does, yeah, and they have special teams issues, and maybe you win on a blocked field goal to keep it from going to overtime. So my head says Bama 31-20. My heart says Florida State gets the upset here 24-21.
Man, I'm telling you what, if they pull an upset like that and they win, I don't care how they win. They win, I'm not going to have a voice the next day. I'm just telling you right now. I got
post-game show is going
to
be tough.
Yep, post-game show. I got to go preach the next day. I ain't having a voice. It's going to sound like Scrooge talking because I'll be screaming my lungs out. Well, okay. I'm going to take the same approach as you, Jesse. I'm going to talk about my head. I'm going to talk about my heart, but I'm going to do a little bit differently. I'm going to combine the two. Okay. So, you know, and the show that will never see a day of the light. I didn't scold Jesse, but I said, how dare you? We're Florida State. We're coming in this game and we're going to win. It's going to be a walkout field goal. We're winning. I think I said 24-21 or something like that.
And you put a little bit of extra sugar in the Kool-Aid.
Yes, I did. I was stirring that baby. Okay. But then, you know, Jesse, I went and watched some of the coaches talk about the team. I went and watched Herb Hand talk about the offensive line. And I went and saw, you know, Tony White talk about the defense. And I listened to Mike Norvell. And, you know, they didn't sound the confidence I wanted. Now, granted, they sounded real, not them, but Mike Norvell and that staff sounded real confident last year. And then we got basically upset against Georgia Tech in Ireland and then continued to poop the bed after that. So
yeah.
I understand why they're not sounding real confident. I understand why they're sounding more realist. But you know, you got to admit, when your coaches don't sound confident, it makes you not feel confident. But you know what, Jesse? We're still Florida State. We still garnet and gold. We're still unconquered, as Odell Higgins like to say, right? And so what I think, Jesse, with my heart, is we're walking into the fourth quarter down maybe one score, maybe a touchdown. It's a game, buddy. It's a game. And Florida State is in the game. And somewhere halfway through the fourth quarter, my head kicks in and Alabama scores three scores, and they beat Florida State 34-17.
I like the other one better. Maybe I'll go clip that out of that episode and cut this one out. You can't be throwing the cold water on us.
I'm so sorry. I just, based on everything I see and hear.
I will say that when you talk about Florida State, again, you're talking about the inexperience here in Bama and all that type of stuff. Look, man, I like a lot of the pieces we have individually. Yeah. None of them have really done it together yet.
Correct.
And so there's a lot of change, and we've heard a lot about mistakes and penalties and all this type of stuff in camp. Those are the types of things that when you're David trying to knock out Goliath, you can't be making turnovers. You can't be missing the interceptions that we talked about. You can't be having all the penalties. Yep. And so that's why I think Florida State is going to be a much better team than last year. And I do think you're not going to get flat out embarrassed.
Yeah. 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 I would agree. I just think
the talent edge
and
them being year two with, yes, there's some change, but it's an offensive coordinator they're familiar with. It's the same defensive coordinator, all that type of stuff. I understand why Alabama should win. I think it's really, it's more, you know, butterflies and unicorns of why I want Florida State to win.
Yeah.
So I understand the pick, man.
Yeah. Yeah. No, listen, I don't think 34-17 is an embarrassment. I mean, it's not great, but it's a 17 point loss. That's two touchdowns and a field goal. And listen, we've seen crazier things happen, right? You go in the fourth quarter, you got a shot and a turnover here, a bad, you know, drop there, a bad call, which, you know, so because it's at Doak Campbell Stadium, I'm sure it's going to be SEC officials. That's usually how it works, is the team that is the team that is the away team gets to bring their officials in. Usually that's usually how it works. So I'm sure it's either going to be SEC officials or it might even be Big 12 or Big 10 officials. Yeah. Who knows? But we know Florida State, we don't get good calls ever.
I hope it's not ACC refs, if there's home cooking or
they're
not.
They're screwing us no matter what.
Yeah.
And so it could be one of those that then gets you to a 17-point loss there. And it won't be because of effort. The one thing I am 100% sure about, and if I'm proven wrong, I'll come on here and say I'm wrong. But the one thing I'm 100% sure about is you will not see loafing this year. Tony White, Gus Malzahn, they will not allow it. And you will not see loafers. You will not see quitters. These kids are going to fight to the end. Now, whether or not it's going to be enough, man, I'd love to be wrong. I'd love to come on the postgame show and say, Jesse, I was wrong, you know? Yeah. I'd love to do that, but you know, just based on everything we've seen, understanding the dynamic of the rosters and everything, I just think that, man, Florida State, I think they'll get to the fourth quarter with this game, still a game, but I just think, you know, Alabama with the talent that it already has and how far their program is ahead and not coming off a 2-10 season, I think that's what's going to kind of carry them through.
Yeah. I think maybe if you got like the LSU game in 22, where like you sandwiched, you just moved Duquesne up.
Right. Oh,
like if you had East Texas A&M before Alabama to just kind of get in sync in a game situation, I think you feel better about that. Because again, man, one of the biggest things is, remember, this coaching staff has never worked together either.
That's right.
They're going to be learning on game day as well. I think that would be huge, but that's not the way it is. And so I think at the end of the day too, man, no matter what happens in this, at least you have the next 3 weeks, which is basically like a small mini camp to be able to fix things. So as long as you look okay in this one, you know, and you're competitive, we'll see. But man, that's going to be it for this episode, guys. If you're watching on YouTube and you're able to comment, drop your score in the comments there. Let us know if you're drinking the Kool-Aid and you think Florida State's going to win big. Hey, say it with your chest out. If you think Florida State's going to get squashed, hey, let us know about that too. But either way, guys, coming up this week, we're going to have this episode for you. We're also going to drop the interview I had with the Alabama Football Podcast. We're looking at doing a live stream on Wednesday night for you guys to come and hang out and let's talk about it, man. Let's see what these last minute feelings have. Obviously, of course, guys, remember Saturday after the game, we will have a post-game live show. If it's good, we're going to be here running around crazy celebrating. You might have to keep up with us because I'm going to just be running around the stadium. If it's bad, we're going to be here to dissect everything with you guys. So being that me and Michael will now both be at the game, just give us a few minutes, about 30 minutes or so. We got to get out of Doak, get back to the car, get everything set up for the live stream, but make sure you guys tap in with us for that as well. PlantTheSpear.com is our website. You can find all of our podcasts, YouTube videos, and written articles over there. Michael, this is it, buddy. Last stop, Alabama, man. Or next stop, Alabama. I can't wait. Next time we talk, it will be just a couple days from game day. So, man, let's go, man. It's time. The rubber's about to hit the road. So, thanks for watching, guys. We will catch you on the next one. As always,
go Noles.